I'd like to call this meeting of the House State Affairs Committee to order. The time is 3:18 on Thursday, January 29th, 2026. We're here in room 120 of the Alaska State Capitol, and please mute your cell phones today. Members present include Representative St. Clair, Representative McCabe, Representative Holland, Representative Himshute, Vice Chair Story, and myself, Chair Carrick. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. Our record secretary today is Cecilia Miller, and our moderator from the Juno LIO is Jude Augustine. Our committee aide for today, as always, is my staff, Stuart Relay. On today's agenda, we have two items, three items, actually. Consideration of amendments on House Bill 133, prompt payment of contracts, will be first. We also have consideration of amendments on House Bill 81, marijuana conviction records. And then we have public testimony and continued discussion on House Bill 124, ADA. Today we only have 1 hour for our hearing, as the second hour is being lent to the Department of Administration Budget Subcommittee. And we will be lending each Thursday through February as to the DOA Subcommittee. So to start with today, the first item on our agenda is House Bill 133 on payment of contracts from Representative Himshute. This is our fourth hearing on the bill. At our hearing on last Thursday, January 22nd, I set an amendment deadline for Wednesday, January 28th at 5 p.m., and we received two amendments. The first amendment is from my office, and I'm going to move Amendment 1, also known as L.1, and I'll object to it for discussion. So Amendment number 1 seeks to address a main cost driver for this bill, which is Department of Health Grants Administration. Quick Eddies.
And in a hurry, I'm Rusty. We're still live.
About that, we just were ensuring we had our processes in order here. So again, I moved Amendment 1 and I objected for discussion. And Amendment 1 before you seeks to address a main cost driver for this bill, which is Department of Health Grants Administration. So one cost that was identified in the Department of Health fiscal notes is necessary technology upgrades. And this amendment simply identifies Rural Health Transformation Fund dollars as a potential funding source for those tech upgrades. Since the Constitution prohibits dedicating funds and prohibits both funding and policy bills from being in the same legislation, this amendment is just intent language, so I want to make that clear. My hope is that when the Finance Committee considers this bill and as they continue their budget process, that they might consider utilizing Rural Health Transformation Fund dollars to address these cost drivers. And I'd be happy to take any questions on the amendment. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the question that I have is, do you know if technology upgrades are permissible use of the Rural Health Transformation Program funds? I know that a lot of times there are specific strings attached, and didn't know if you had any idea on if this is one of those.
That's an excellent question, Representative Vance. My understanding with the Rural Health Transformation Fund is it can't be used for capital improvements like building costs or for hardware, but it can be used for software costs. And so technology upgrades that would be within the parameters of the Rural Health Transformation Fund is the intent here. And I know that there's some other restrictions around rural health transformation funds. I just want to make it clear that this could be a potential fund source for helping to advance prompt payment in the future and to have our departments continuing to look at that as a potential resource.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on amendment number 1? Seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection to Amendment 1. And seeing no further objection, Amendment number 1, also known as L.1, is adopted. That brings us to Amendment number 2, which I understand Rep. McCabe might be withdrawing Amendment number 2.
Yeah, I'm going to withdraw number 2, thanks.
Okay, so Amendment number 2, also known as T.1, has been withdrawn. And that brings us to amendment number 3, Representative McCabe.
Thanks. I move amendment 3.
We'll object for discussion. Amendment, or Representative McCabe.
Thank you. So this amendment addresses an unintended consequence to HB 133. As written, the bill applies prompt payment penalties not only to private vendors and municipalities, but also to nonprofit organizations. Let me be clear, we should always be paying our bills on time. There's no doubt. However, Alaska has approximately 6,300 nonprofit organizations, many of which already receive state funding through grants and appropriations. Unlike private businesses, nonprofit payments often involve reimbursements, reporting requirements, and compliance reviews that can delay payment through no fault of the state. In fact, it's probably the legislature's fault that requires all that oversight. So we have put a bunch of things in place that require oversight, and then we're going to say, oh, and by the way, we'll give you a penalty if we, our regulations, delay your payment. Applying these automatic penalties in these situations creates unnecessary fiscal exposure and administrative challenges. This amendment simply removes nonprofit organizations from the penalty provisions while keeping all the other protections in place, and keeping these penalty provision protections in place for municipalities and our private contractors, who are the ones who really need to be paid on time, ensuring this bill remains workable and fiscally responsible. So prompt payment laws, typically in many in other states, are designed for private commerce. They're not designed for nonprofit organizations, which are fundamentally different because they are grant-funded partners of the state rather than traditional vendors. Alaska has 6,300 nonprofits, as I said, and they receive state funding. Applying these automatic penalties to this entire group creates a significant fiscal problem and administrative backlog at the risk of unbudgeted costs across multiple agencies. This amendment does not reduce funding to the nonprofits or delay payments than they already are. It simply removes the automatic penalties when payment timing is driven by compliance, reimbursement structures, or reporting requirements. By exempting nonprofits from the penalty provisions, the amendment protects the state treasury, preserves agency oversight, and strengthens HB 133 by keeping it realistic, targeted, and enforceable. Thanks.
Thank you. I see a couple of questions. Representative Holland.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair Carrick. On amendment number 3, I want to speak, I guess, in opposition to the amendment. I've been a volunteer in nonprofits. I've been a board member. I've been a board chair. I've been an executive director. I've spent nearly 40 years in nonprofits. And nonprofits are absolutely essential to our communities. They get work done in our communities that would not be done otherwise. Yet, at the end of the day, they operate as a business. They have payroll that they have to make on time. They have vendors they have to pay on time. When they are not paid in a timely manner through their grants or contracts, they have to figure out how to juggle the money just like a private company does. And they have even greater challenges on trying to find that working capital. Many of these organizations rely upon probably all of us who have funded nonprofit organizations in our community, that we provide the working capital to help those organizations do that work. And we make it so much harder for those organizations when they have to figure out how are they going to pay their employees on time, but now they've got to wait for an extended amount of time to be paid, in this case by the state that might be trying to use them as their bank to hold on to their money. So I think our nonprofits absolutely need to be treated as well, I would argue even better than perhaps municipalities and other organizations, because they are the organization that we have donated to, we have volunteered for, and we have asked them to do work that we want done by a nonprofit. And I think we owe it to those folks that have contributed and supported them to make sure they get paid in a timely manner. As far as the issue of the compliance work, I've done a lot of this stuff, and you know, I agree with Representative's comments that the compliance side of this is very hard. But I also know that the hard part of this compliance is on the front end of negotiating the contracts and on the very back end when you have to go through a single audit and later auditing. The day-to-day work of getting paid doesn't have any of that. Nonprofits can submit an invoice, they get paid right away, and this bill is not addressing the time to develop the contract, or it's not addressing what might be at the end of the year a single audit type requirement. This is just the day-to-day. If they've done the work, do they get paid on time? I think they should be.
And I'm going to go to Representative Hemshute and then St. Clair.
Thank you, through the chair. I just want to point out some nonprofits that would benefit from. So again, I'm hoping that nonprofits are not banking a ton of money, that they're spending the money on their mission. And so they have this very thin margin that they're working on, which is a big driver on this bill. And so I was just going to name a couple of the nonprofits that would be impacted across the state. So the Alaska Literacy Program, Presbyterian Hospitality House, Set Free Alaska, food banks, and obviously I could go on for a long time. This bill is for tribes, municipalities, and nonprofits as organizations that generally do not keep the margins that the private sector, I hope, will have. Not always, but we hope. And again, like my colleague from Upper Hillside mentioned, these are organizations doing the work that the state is either not able to do or they're probably doing it better than we could do it. So I think they deserve our support and they deserve to be paid on time. And I also would question of the 6,300 nonprofits, a whole bunch of those are in my hometown and they're not all getting state funding. So I'm not sure 6,300 represents the actual number of nonprofits receiving funding. So I'm opposed to the amendment.
Representative Tinker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support this amendment. There are still so many unknowns with this bill that we don't know if they're seeking, if nonprofits are seeking reimbursement, if they need it for their day-to-day. As was stated by my colleague to the right, he said that they submit invoices and they get reimbursed. Okay, 30 days, when does that start? And I don't believe that the nonprofits need to be exempt from this. They are not necessarily part of it. I understand the importance of them. I'm not saying nonprofits are bad. What I'm saying is a lot of even it was stated earlier that they submit invoices. That just adds another layer to it. They're doing stuff before they've actually gotten the money. Thank you.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So you are portraying, or we are portraying, nonprofits as these small, humble, mom-and-pop volunteer organizations. I would submit to you that Providence Hospital, arguably the largest landowner in the Anchorage Bowl, is a nonprofit. Headquartered in Seattle. That's a nonprofit. They have thousands of employees. They get paid tons of money. They are not just the general volunteers like you are talking about, and I applaud your participation in those, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about nonprofits like Providence, right? So I think we need to remember that. I am not opposed to what you're talking about. I absolutely said we should be paying our bills on time. All I want to do is remove that automatic penalty clause. It would just be status quo for them right now. It would be status quo for the nonprofits, for the mom and pops that, and I would suggest that those folks are probably getting paid because their bills from the state or their money from the state is probably not in the millions or hundreds of millions. Their bills from the state are probably pretty small, and I'm sure they are getting paid. So I don't want to seem heartless to you, and it's not a bunch of volunteers that we're talking about here. We're talking about nonprofit, big nonprofit entities. And now all of a sudden we're going to put some sort of automatic penalty on the state that already has limited funds, and there's a bunch of regulations that need to be done, and there's a bunch of things that be – I'm sorry, I can't do it. I cannot do it. And I think that we need to recognize that there is a difference, a huge difference between nonprofits – and Cruise Construction or some of the folks that absolutely depend on money coming from the state in a timely manner. So.
And I see no further discussion, but I am going to maintain my objection. I do want to just note that I think there is something a little bit valid in the argument behind this amendment, in that nonprofit organizations do encompass a huge variety of different types of organizations. But that said, and I recognize the intent in this amendment, but that said, we, in hearing about this bill over the course of its, since its inception to now, every single entity that I've heard from that would be directly impacted was a smaller municipality or nonprofit, and I think they're hit a lot harder than some of those larger ones. So I might ask the sponsor of this amendment, though I'm opposed today, I might ask the sponsor of this amendment to possibly work with the bill sponsor and see if there's a way to narrowly tailor the amendment a little bit more closely, if that's something that might be of interest.
Sure. So keep in mind,
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. Sorry. This leaves municipalities in there. It simply removes the nonprofits. So it leaves municipalities, it leaves tribal, it leaves contractors. It simply removes the word nonprofits. So I'm happy, and I will continue to offer this if need be on the House and on the floor, or we can work out a way to do what I think needs to be done to make this a good bill.
I can take him. No. Yes.
happy to work with Representative Hampshire. So thank you for that discussion and for the clarification about municipalities. That said, I do maintain my objection, and will the clerk please call the roll on amendment number 3?
Representative Henshaw.
No.
Representative Holland.
No.
Representative Vance.
Yes.
Representative McCabe.
Yes.
Representative St. Clair.
Yes.
Representative Story.
No.
Co-chair Carrick.
No.
3 yeas and 4 nays.
And with 3 yeas and 4 nays, amendment number 3 is not adopted. That brings the underlying bill back before us for consideration. Is there final discussion on this bill today before I entertain a motion? And I'm going to ask members to try to keep their comments fairly brief today, because we are working on a short time frame. But Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you for that reminder. I probably need it. You know, I'm going to be in support of the bill and moving it on. However, I just want to voice a concern and a request that as this bill moves forward, I know the fiscal impacts issue will be particularly important for the Finance Committee to work on. And you know, I have, and I've heard of other members who have concerns with these fiscal notes. There are 15 fiscal notes. 8 of them have zero fiscal notes. 6 of them have a fairly substantial size, as well as a 7th one that has got a number of different aspects to its fiscal notes. There's a great degree of disparity in the fiscal notes and the approach here. From my standpoint, paying bills on time is something that should not be generating a fiscal note. This ought to be how the departments are staffed. And this bill, to me, generating a fiscal note makes no sense. It should take no more time to pay somebody on time as it does to pay somebody late. It's the same amount of work. So I'm supportive of the bill moving on. I feel that the fiscal notes here do not provide clarity on the true impact. I hope that as this moves on that we will find a way to recognize that the staffing required to pay on time, it's the same work that's been going on. It's the same work that needs to happen in the future. And if there's a problem paying on time, then let's figure out the workflows and the tools and the technology. I think the amendment that we just put in was a valuable addition because it speaks to the right approach, which is if there are tools or processes that need to be improved, let's deal with that. But to let this bill carry along some notion that we have to make in some of the departments a significant increase in staff to just process payments, I think characterizes the bill in a way that I hope is not something that carries through in its final form as it passes out. My opinion, this shouldn't have a fiscal note on it, but I recognize that that's for the Finance Committee, and I look forward to the work there to examine this in more detail. Thank you.
Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And contrary, or not contrary, but agreeing with my my counterpart, the fiscal notes on the opposite end of the spectrum, I believe, are indeterminate because they just don't know. We would have to go through a time period and see, okay, how many were late. I've contacted several of the departments, and yes, they were slow getting back to me too. Predominantly, their numbers of late grants, contracts, and reimbursements were drastically different than that of the Foraker group. And I spoke to someone from the Foraker group, and they stated that they were the ones that originated. No one commissioned it. I don't think we have all the information that we need right now. I'm not going to stop it. I'm going to let it go out of committee because it has another committee referral, and I believe in the process. But as it stands right now, I cannot support this. Thank you.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So my problem, co-chair or Chair Carrick, I have a huge problem with automatic payments, automatic penalties. I think it's a really poor way to do government. I really do. And I think there is a better way to require that our state government do its fiduciary responsibilities and pay the payments on time. Automatic penalties on us, essentially. We could set up a OODA loop, some sort of a loop in there where we could cost ourselves a whole bunch of money just by putting something into regulation, and all of a sudden there's this automatic payment there, and we cause the department to take longer to make a payment, and now there's an automatic penalty in there for something that we caused. I'm sorry, I can't support doing government that way.
Representative Vance.
Thank you. I think, not to sound very kumbaya-ish, I think everyone has highlighted the truth about this bill. Every statement I hear is very, very valid and true. But what I think it's highlighting is that our departments are struggling. On the fiscal notes, my recommendation is to the bill sponsor that she look at how many available PCNs are there, that they should not be asking for, they should not be requiring fiscal notes for additional money, but how many positions are available that are simply not filled, that maybe the funding is already there, but they still need the staff to be able to keep up with the workflow. But, you know, what recruitment and hiring practices has that department done to help in this area? We know that we have departments who have made changes that helped with their workflow. We've heard from Department of Administration, I think in the OIT, that they have implemented, you know, some of the newer technologies and programs, and also AI that has helped streamline some of their systems to address backlogs and issues. So I appreciate the sponsor bringing this bill forward because I think it's touching on a broader issue that we're always trying to figure out how to reduce the regulation and just all of the extra nonsense that has accumulated over time. I am also with Representative McCabe that I feel that having a penalty like that may not be the best avenue, but I understand the motivation of what the bill sponsor is trying to accomplish. So my recommendation today is to seek out available PCNs and challenge those fiscal notes and find out what a good motivation is for them to be able to meet these deadlines, because something obviously needs to change. Thank you.
Let's see a few more comments. Vice Chair Story, and then we'll go Rep. St. Clair.
I know I've already had one bite of the apple, but I just want to kind of expound on what she said.
We need to get to 124. There's people waiting.
And more calling in all the time. So, Vice Chair Story.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I wanted to highlight what a discussion we had last time on the bill, and that is we really were trying to get an idea for how much penalties we are having to pay to private contractors. And I think having that number, and I'm hoping through some of our audits we can find that out, we can see how big of a problem this is. So I appreciate everyone's comments on this.
Thank you. I want to let the bill sponsor have the last word, so, or the
Yeah, last word. I'll take the last word.
Representative.
Okay.
Take Claire.
To the chair. I looked through based on what Representative Vance said. There are 7 PCNs that are requested within these fiscal notes. So that leads to the question, do they need additional people or do they need money because they think they're not going to meet it on time? That would be, I just wanted that information to get out. It's based on, fiscal notes were based, most of them, at least 7 of them, were based on filling vacancies, and that's what the money was coming from, not necessarily from late payments. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Before I let the bill sponsor have the last word, I just want to say, you know, I really appreciate the work that this committee has done on this legislation and the thought put into it. I don't think there's disagreement at this table about the state should pay its bills on time. And I really hear that. I think there's just different approaches to how we accomplish that. What we heard from our office very loud and clear from multiple independent municipalities as well as AML, but what we also heard from multiple independent nonprofits across the state and tribal organizations is that the carrot approach wasn't working. Everything they were trying to do to get the state to work with them, to get them timely information and to get prompt payment wasn't effective. And so this legislation, in some ways, I look at it as the stick. This is the other end of that spectrum from a lot of groups, hundreds of organizations in Alaska that are pretty well at their wits' end, and they're really frustrated. So I think there's different approaches to get there. House Bill 133 represents one of those ways, and I think in respect to some of those challenges, I would like to see this bill move forward and have a chance to be heard in the Finance Committee. I want to let Representative Hemshue have the last word, though.
Thank you. I'll go as fast as I can. Thank you, Chair Carrick. I want to echo what Chair Carrick just said about this is probably an all of the above. Like, we need to do everything we can to help make sure that these payments go out on time because agencies are staffed, because they have the training, because, you know, we need to make sure that they have what they need. And then, you know, if we can find more carrots, I'm all for it. But at the same time, it's not going to hurt to have the stick. As far as, you know, the idea that it's a bad idea to use a penalty, I do disagree with that unless we take the penalty for private contractors off the books. And there's a thing called CRUFT that I learned at a national conference a couple of years ago where we keep adding regulations and never taking any regulations off that aren't used anymore. Some states dedicate entire interim committees to going through statute and finding what they can take off. And I would support that. But in the meantime, we have a problem. I think we recognize the problem. And if we want government to run more like business, then we need to pay on time.
I am going to turn to Vice Chair Story for a motion at this point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the House State Affairs Committee move CS for a House Bill 133, also known as 34-LS. 0114/L as amended with attached fiscal notes and authorizing legal services to make any necessary technical and conforming changes.
Object.
And there is an objection, so I will ask the clerk to please take the roll.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Hemshaw.
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Holland.
Yes.
Representative Vance.
No.
Representative McCabe.
No.
Representative St. Clair.
No.
Representative Co-Chair Carrick.
Yes.
4 yeas, 3 nays.
With a vote of 4 yeas and 3 nays, House Bill 133/L has been moved from the House State Affairs Committee. We'll take a very brief at ease to sign the paperwork. At ease. House State Affairs Committee is back on the record. Next on our agenda is House Bill 81, Marijuana Conviction Records, from Representative Davis Nelson. This is our third hearing on this bill, and at our hearing on Tuesday, January 27, I set an amendment deadline for Wednesday, January 28, and received one amendment from my own office, which I'm going to move now. I move amendment number one, also known as N.1. I'll just object very briefly to say what this amendment is. It is simply an effective date change so that the effective date becomes January 1, 2027. It was before January 1, 2026. Is there any discussion on this amendment? And
I hope you did a great job parsing the date.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. And I just want to confirm on the record that the bill sponsor is supportive of the amendment.
To the chair, yes, I am supportive of the amendment.
Thank you. So I remove my objection. Is there any additional objection? Seeing none, amendment number one, also known as N.1, is adopted. And this brings House Bill 81 back before us. Is there any additional discussion on House Bill 81 before we entertain a motion? I'd like to give the bill sponsor one more opportunity to say why this bill is great.
Through the chair to everyone on the committee, this bill has been three different sessions in the making, so I encourage all of you to say yes for workforce development and for people that have served their time and paid their debt to society. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm seeing no further discussion. Vice Chair Story, can I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the House State Affairs Committee move House Bill 81, also known as 34-LS0474/N, as amended from the committee with attached fiscal notes and authorizing legal services to make any necessary technical and conforming changes.
And without objection, House Bill 81, as amended, has been moved from the House State Affairs Committee. Similarly to last time, we will save the paperwork for when we adjourn the meeting.
Good job. You're hired.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. The final item on our agenda today is a continuation of House Bill 124 on the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority from my office. At our last hearing on Tuesday, we began a presentation from our ADA Executive Director, Randy Raro, and took some public testimony. Today, what I'd like to do, because of the time crunch, is try to complete public testimony. I believe we can do that in the time we have left. So Mr. Raro, I do see, is online, and I do not believe we will get to the presentation continuation today, Mr. Raro, but I would really love to schedule with you at a time that works for you to continue that next week. Given our time crunch, I'm going to turn straight to public testimony on the legislation so that we can close that today. For our public testifiers online, we are going to hold to a very strict 2-minute timeline for testimony. I apologize in advance if I do have to cut you off today. And I just want to remind folks before we start testimony that you can also email your testimony after today to house.state.affairs@akledge.gov, and it will be entered into the public record. Also, if you have testified previously on this bill, I will not be calling on you again today. So just if folks have called in and listed for testimony, I'm only going to accept the testimony once. So that said, we have public testimony open currently, and we will start with our testifier in the room, Jim Clark. Welcome. And if you could please just state your name and affiliation, if any, for the record.
My name is Jim Clark. I'm an attorney in Juneau. I've been representing clients in the natural resource field for 50 years here in Juneau, and have been representing. I represented the Alaska Pulp Mill in Sitka for 30 years. I was chief of staff to Frank Murkowski for 4 years, and I've been working with mining clients for the last several years. So all of that time I've dealt with ADA, and it is our essentially our industrial development bank, and any attempt to make changes to it necessarily are going to have unintended consequences. And I would ask that this be held, that this bill be held up until you've exhausted all the due diligence you can do with the ADA about concerns you may have. I think the legislation is premature before you have really done that. I know of no harder worker and diligent state employee than Randy Ruaro. I dealt with him for 25 years, and I know that he will pay attention to your concerns and deal with them. And I think that before we risk the unintended consequences that I see, particularly in Section 7 and 8 of this bill, that you exhaust that lane. I just am very concerned about the uncertainty you'll cause. From a Southeastern's point of view, they represent the shipyard in Ketchikan. I've been working with them on the opportunity for additional processing in Southeast Alaska. As you'll recall, there's a bond issue that ADA passed for a processing center in Ketchikan. It was Senator Stedman's bill, and it is an area where we are looking to combine some of the legacy tails throughout Southeast Alaska that are, in some cases, DEC contaminated sites, that we could pick those resources up and move them to a central processing center in Southeast. And ADA has kind of taken the ball on this and had a big meeting in mid-December that made this a very, very useful undertaking in getting things started on that opportunity. So I would, I know your time is short, I won't belabor it, but I would just ask that this bill be set aside until you have conducted oversight hearings. You've conducted more due diligence than I think you have, because I think the risk of unintended consequences here is great. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much for being here, Mr. Clark. I really appreciate you waiting to take public testimony.
Thank you.
Thanks, Drew.
We're going to go online now and begin with Carolyn Keller in Fairbanks. And again, please put your name on the record and present your testimony in 2 minutes or less.
Yes, this is Carolyn Keller. I'm a private citizen and calling from Fairbanks. I wanted to say that I am in favor of the AIDEA Accountability Act, Alaska HB 124. I think it's valuable to encourage public participation to ensure that ADA works in the public interest. I like that board members would be confirmed by the legislature, and also increasing reporting to the legislature. I like the idea of designating a seat on the board for someone from an environmental advocacy organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Keller, and thank you for testifying. Next, we will go to Jasmine Vent in Fairbanks.
Did you say Jasmine? Sorry, it cut out.
I did, yes. Jasmine Vent. Thank you.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Jasmine Vent. I am Kwikon and Inupiaq from the village of Husnea, born and raised in Alaska and a resident of Fairbanks since 2016, and then on the call today to express my strong support for HB 124, the ADA Accountability Act, and I would like to thank Representative Carrick for introducing this important legislation. ADA is a state-funded development authority supported by public dollars, yet it has operated for far too long without sufficient accountability for the people it is meant to serve. And this lack of oversight can be especially concerning for Alaska Native communities, who are often directly impacted by large-scale development projects while being excluded from fair and meaningful public processes. And I'm at a dogyard right now, so excuse the dogs in the background. But oftentimes, ADA has shown a troubling pattern of advancing industrial development while minimizing the public engagement. So that can be really concerning, as it disregards a lot of tribal voices, even when projects affect tribal lands and subsistence resources. So I believe that HB 124 would improve accountability by tightening the rules to prevent conflicts of interest within ADA leadership ensuring large-scale projects receive direct legislative review before moving forward, and making ADA's records and decision-making subject to public disclosure laws. I believe that these changes represent basic standards that should already apply to an agency with such expansive authority and spending power. And transparency and legislative oversight are essential to ensuring development decisions reflect the public interest, not just private industrial priorities. So to end on that note, I urge to support HB 124 and help ensure ADA is accountable to all Alaskans, including Alaska Native communities who have long borne the consequences of decisions made without our consent. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you, Ms. Vent, for your testimony. We will go now to Rika Mao in Homer.
Thank you. Am I on?
You are. We can hear you.
Thank you. I truly appreciate the opportunity to speak to HB 124. My name is Rika Mao, and I'm a private citizen in Homer. I have to say I am thrilled that this bill is before you and being considered. I'm in full support of the proposed wording to the language in the IDA Accountability Act, because there is a true need for increased accountability and a more transparent relationship between the authority and legislature and the public. This bill is so necessary. I urge you to pass it through this committee and on to the next step in bringing it to the floor of the legislature. ADA is a public corporation meant to serve Alaskans, and it must answer to accountability, transparency, and a broad input of the public members of the authority that have knowledge and diverse voices on environmental and public interest projects. I urge you to pass this through the committee, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mao, for testifying. We're going to go now to Megan Lingle in Juneau.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can, thank you.
Great, thank you. My syndic name is Cook Lutz, and my English name is Megan Lingle. I'm originally from Keith Clarn of the Chuck Nerdy from the Wishpeton Clarn, or Eagle Shark, residing on Alcorn Land, so Juneau, Alaska. I was born and raised in Alaska, and I'm calling to support HB 124, the ADA Accountability Act. For Indigenous people in Alaska, land is not just an economic resource. Our lands are not dollar signs. They are our food system, our culture, and our responsibility to future generations. We understand ourselves as interconnected with the land, the water, the animals, and each other. When the land is harmed, our people are harmed. Decisions about roads, mining, and industrial development determine whether our children will be able to hunt, fish, and gather as our ancestors did, or whether those lifeways will be permanently disrupted. ADA has played a major role in advancing the Antler Road Project. This project threatens salmon, caribou, clean water, and subsistence lifeways for many rural and tribal communities. Yet these decisions are being made by the state authority with very limited legislative oversight and very little direct accountability to the people most affected. That is unacceptable. Economic development should not come at the cost of Indigenous sovereignty or subsistence survival. When public money is used to push projects that permanently alter land and water, there must be robust public review and meaningful checks on that power. HB 124 does not stop development. It ensures that ADA is governed with transparency, legislative oversight, and respect for the public interest, including tribal and subsistence communities. Alaska's constitution says our resources must be managed for the maximum benefit of the people. Indigenous people are a part of that people. Rural communities are a part of that people. Subsistence users are a part of that people. We deserve a seat at the table before irreversible decisions are made. I urge you to support HB 124 so that no state authority can move massive industrial projects forward without accountability to the people, the land, and future generations. Ganesh Cheesh for the time and for listening, and a special thank you to Representatives Carrick and Hinshute and my representative, Andy Story. I appreciate your leadership.
Thank you, Ms. Lingle, and thank you for testifying. I'm going to go now to Grace Kirky in Anchorage, and just as a reminder for testifiers who may have just called in, we are keeping to a strict two-minute timeline today. So please, Ms. Kirkey, if you could provide your testimony in 2 or fewer minutes.
Of course. Yeah. Hi, my name's Grace Kirkey. I live in Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm calling to support HB 124. I really think Alaskans deserve transparency and stronger oversight. This is really a common sense step to strengthen accountability, ensure actions align with the needs and interests of Alaskans. Development should never come before the expense of public trust. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kirkey, for calling in. We'll go now to David DeLong in Fairbanks.
Hello, my name is David DeLong. I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska. Am I being heard?
We can hear you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm calling in to support 124 Transparency Act. You know, as a member of the general public, data is sort of like this black hole that massive amounts of money go into, and we have no idea what's going on. Except that in many cases, it's projects that the people who will be directly affected are very much against. So, yeah, please pass this bill. We need it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Mr. DeLong, and for testifying. We're going to go now to Teresa Overmeyer in Anchorage.
Representative, can you hear me?
We can, thank you.
Representative Terrick, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
I'm testifying. We're going to go now to Teresa Overmeyer.
Let's see. I'm just afraid that it's double.
Representative, can thank you.
Okay.
Representative Terrick, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Representative?
Can you hear me now?
It's like a double.
We can hear you.
Could I turn off my cell phone?
I'm going to go now to Teresa Overmeyer.
Could I turn off my cell phone?
I'm just afraid that it's double. Representative.
So, Ms. Overmeyer, if you can still hear us, we can't hear you. There's a lot of feedback. If we can, we will potentially try to come back. But just as a reminder, please also feel free to send your comments to house.state.affairs@aklege.gov, and we will record testimony that way too. We're going to go to Don Duncan in Fairbanks.
Hello, this is Don Duncan in Fairbanks, master guide number 136. I got to Fairbanks in 1975 with $197. I made my living as a wilderness guide, hunting guide, fishing guide, photography guide. I retired when I was 60. I worked everywhere from Nooshigak, Bristol Bay, to the Lickitung Point, Dead Horse and White Horse in the Arctic Ocean. House Bill 124 is, without a doubt, a wolf in sheep's clothing. If passed, it'll be a death by a thousand cuts. This state relies on resource development, and it's never going to please everyone. And ironically, the people that are benefiting the most from the oil money and the mineral money and resource development are the people that get that money, people that profit from it, the people that get paid when we don't get our PFD full allotment. If those of you that want to see to pay out a dividend, I suggest you strongly look at the University of Alaska and start demanding it be run as a for-profit and a dividend payable to the state of Alaska to be deposited in the university, from the university into the PFD. The Hall Road is 50 years old. I'm still waiting for a boat launch to be built so I can get back to the Arctic Ocean without having to strong arm two of the biggest oil companies in the world to get permission to drive to a Lickitung Point. It seems to me, the testimony given, that the small business loans, like I never got from a bank, not one loan in a bank in 50 years, if that might have been something I could have used. Sounds like they're paying off and don't have any default rates. I think that's a good thing. I think what Ada needs to work on is getting us a salmon hatchery for the Yukon River, kind of like what they're doing in Whitehorse. We've studied to death why the salmon and kings aren't coming back. But one thing's for certain, they don't know how many are making it down to the ocean. So the only choice we got is to build a hatchery and start dumping more and more fish into the Yukon and pray to God some of them actually come back. And for those of you that think fish processors down in Southeast are a good thing, or elsewhere, and a hatchery's everywhere else but here, I want somebody to tell me who is bringing up all the rich resources up to the Fairbanks in the interior, to the villages out there that don't have access to fish. We've been cut off of fish for the last 10 years. So I'd say be real careful who you want to get a dividend from. First, get it from the University of Alaska. It is actually doing the best thing it can to bring money into the state so those that are freeloading it on it still get paid. The university is $100 million plus in deferred maintenance, behind in deferred maintenance, and it's put us $1 billion in debt. Start getting a dividend from them. Thank you for your time. Have a good day.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan. I offered a little bit of latitude there, but thank you so much for calling in and for testifying. We're going to go to Bernie Hoffman in Fairbanks.
Yes. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Carey. Thank you for you and the others that are, have brought forth this motion, this the HB 124. There does need to be accountability. There's been some stuff happening this past summer where money was transferred and given away. We need to find out where it's going. We need the accountability. And I'm so glad that we've brought this up and it's coming forward. And yes, the resources need to be developed, but they need to be developed in a way that we know what's happening, unlike what's happening in D.C. where we've got the grift and the corruption. So yeah, let's try to keep our state open and up to date and let the people know what's happening so we can make a choice. Thank you so much for your time, and just have a great time. Be safe down there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. Really appreciate you calling in. And last but not least, for folks that did not get a chance to testify on Tuesday, again, if you did get a chance to testify, you can still submit written testimony, but we are going to forego repeat testimony today. But last but not least today, we have Jamie Bittmar from Fairbanks.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie Bittmar. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Great. I'm calling in from Fairbanks. I'm a business owner calling in term support of HB 124 because I want to see transparency, responsible decision making, and accountability in how ADA uses public resources. Specifically, ADA has been spending significant amounts of public money on the Ambler Road project, including an approved $35 million for pre-development work and a recent $50 million board commitment, plus additional millions allocated for work in 2024 without broad legislative oversight or clear accountability to people in the state. And this is just for speculative road projects. So as someone who opposes the end of the road, I'm concerned that huge sums of public funding are being directed towards a controversial project that many Alaskans, including tribal governments and community leaders, do not support. The project's costs and benefits remain uncertain, and millions of dollars being authorized without transparent legislative review or meaningful public input. It is strong focus on resource development, especially through its Road to Resources program, is short-sighted because it prioritizes non-renewable extractive industries that eventually decline, leaving potential environmental cleanup costs and long-term damage to public health. And this is only one example of where it is investing that doesn't make sense for Alaska. For those reasons, I urge the committee here to support and advance HB 124. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Bittmar. Really appreciate you calling and testifying. Let's try one more time, Teresa Obermeyer.
Representative here, apologies because I was on my computer and my cell phone previously. I just wanted to commend you, particularly Representative Kira, for bringing this ADA issue forward. It sounds to me like every person that has testified is for more accountability of ADA. I assume you have the sponsor statement that gives seven bullets. This is what we should be doing in our state. Representative, I truly commend you, and I ask that this committee support this HB 124 and pass it out of committee. It should be approved by the legislature. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Ms. Overmeyer, and thank you for working with us through those tech difficulties. Appreciate you calling in. And that concludes everybody that's on the list for public testimony today. At this time, we are going to close public testimony on House Bill 124. We did not get to finishing today our presentation from Executive Director Randy Raro, and so because we did not, I'm going to hold House Bill 124 and not set an amendment deadline today until we're able to finish our dialogue with ADA. So at this time, we're just going to be setting House Bill 124 aside, and we will take it up next week at a later hearing.
Ashley, is Mr. Raro still online?
Yes, Representative McCabe. Mr. Raro is still online.
Can we ask a question, or do we have some time before?
We don't. We have to be adjourned, like, now.
Oh, Calvin can wait.
We're going to hold questions just because.
Fine.
I'd rather have a more substantive dialogue when we have the time to get into it.
We'll just do it all on social media.
All right. Thanks, Representative McCabe. So, again, we're setting House Bill 124 aside for now. Seeing no additional items on today's agenda, this concludes our business for today. Our next hearing is Tuesday, February 3rd at 3:15 here in Room 120. We will have the full 2 hours at that hearing. And the agenda for next Tuesday is as follows. We will finally get to that introduction of House Bill 202, designating a state vegetable from Minority Leader Representative Delana Johnson. Just want to be clear about who is sponsoring that legislation. Do an introduction of House Resolution 6, the USA 250th anniversary from Representative St. Clair, followed by introduction of the same, similar resolution, HCR 9, USA 250 from my office. And with no further business before the committee, we are adjourned at 4:15 p.m.